Association and the honorable members all served in paying attention. Well, honorable members, I think we have finally received the an apology from honorable Gumede that he seriously tied up the other side and he's not going to make it to our area. So we're no longer expecting him. And honorable Gomo, of course, has requested that around 11, I think she has already walked out, as well as the deputy minister. EG, you haven't said anything about the GPW, unless if I was sleeping, but I haven't heard you saying anything about the GPW completely. Maybe there is a good reason why you're not saying anything. And, of course, it's because with the Electoral Commission, I've seen you have spoken to it wherever it matters. And honorable members, the issues of SCOBA, if it was possible with the audit action plan, that I promise you to give you a round on that only. We deal with the rest, the other bulk of the information in terms of the strategic plan and the APP, and then we go through that first, and then I give you a round now to deal with issues of the audit action plan, where you have got all these other issues that relate to SCOBA and matters that are current in the department. Is that agreeable? Yeah, I was saying that the SCOBA issue, let's make it the last issue to deal with. Yeah. So that we don't lose focus on exactly what we came here for. And then, but you'll get around for the matters relating to audit action. Okay. Now it's open. I start with Honorable Hussein, and then followed by Honorable Munisi, followed by Kenya, followed by Rapuji, followed by Honorable Fiflet. And then in that order, Honorable Hussein.
Chair, thank you very much. I say thank you to the DG for the lengthy informative presentation. And as usual, let me try and start with the positive and leave the negative to the end. In fact, maybe this time there'll probably be a few more positives than negatives. Nonetheless, I'm particularly encouraged by the fact that when I read the annual report last year, it was somewhat of a horror story at that point. But and I'm reminded of some of the things that I raised there, which is very encouraging to hear from the DG the actions that are being taken to actually address some of the shortcomings in that report. So just as a general point to make is that it is encouraging to see that the department is taking some of those things very seriously, although I don't think the DG has covered all of them, but understandably so, we'll have yet another opportunity to deal with it at a later stage. Chair, I'm also encouraged by the fact that there is a little bit more of an effort to try and address the frontline experience and customer service in the department, encouraged by the comments that the DG has made, although I have to say that the experience that I receive on a regular basis is the opposite. I know that this is probably something that will take time to address completely. I completely get that. But over the last few months and going up to a year, I'm not seeing from myself anything that convinces me that it's actually going to get better. And I'm sure the DG would agree with me. It was on SAFM recently and a number of callers talked about the level of responses that you get from officials in the department, responses to emails, telephone calls, turnaround times on those issues is still really, really bad. And that makes up the bulk of your complaints that I often receive as a member. I don't know what the experience of the other members of Parliament are, but generally that makes up the bulk of the complaints where people run to us. And because of their inability to get a response from the department, they then turn to us for assistance. And if that matter can be resolved, I promise you it will make our lives much, much simpler. We don't have to then follow up or intervene on these things. I'd be interested to hear the director and the DG's response to that on exactly what is being done. I get the point of training, but how long is this thing going to take to actually address and turn that entire situation around? And it speaks to the general professionalism of the department. Then, Chair, what adds to this, the frustration of this, is again the issue of VFS. Now, when the members of the public have problems with the department, it's easy for them to contact someone in the department. But VFS themselves don't make it as simple as possible for applicants to contact them directly and get queries. And this is causing quite a lot of frustration to a number of applicants because the VFS now acts as an agent for the department. And unfortunately, their conduct is impacting on the department's ability to professionalize the service. So is there something that you're doing about it? Are you aware of this situation that we've got? People are unable to get their appointments in time, it's taking far too long to get the appointments, all sorts of problems that I can keep you busy with for a long time on VFS. But I'd like to hear what plans or what interaction you're having with VFS to address some of these problems. The ID documents, the rollout of the smart IDs, I've seen the figure up there, which is encouraging. It's 2.2 million by the end of March. And you did mention, DG, the figure obviously will change. Those estimates are based on the resources that we have currently. And I think the rollout with the banks is a positive step. There might be some security concerns, but we'll wait for the minister to make the announcement. Is there any estimates that you have on the figures there and by what percentage roughly that will increase? Because I don't remember the year, but to reach 5 million is 2018 or 2017, thereabout. And if there's about 7 years. So it's going to take still a considerable amount of time to try and cover the entire population, quite understandably so. But maybe that would give some encouragement. Maybe the minister is going to raise it in detail in his budget speech. If you could just give us some indication on a percentage-wise of how that figure will actually grow in short in the field. The biometrics at port of entry, I wish I had a vuvuzela to blow because I think, you know, that's a song I've been singing for a while. Because it just makes absolute sense. So the follow-up question to that is it then necessary for visa applicants to have to appear in person? Because that was the one thing that was causing them to appear in person to be at the office. So now that you're able to capture the biometrics at the port of entry on arrival, surely they didn't have to appear in person at the VFS office. Then I just want to get your clarity on two matters. If you look at your slide, page 9, it's at the bottom of that, it says, am I reading the right page? Yes. Sorry, page 8. It says, maximum period of approval to import required skills, 3 months approval from application. That's the plan, right? When you compare it with what's on page 31, there you talk about 8 months for applications collected. Now, and you did say, DG, that the focus will be on the critical skills and the work visas and all of that. So somehow, this thing is not tying up for me. If the plan is to try and issue those visas or those permits to achieve that outcome, and you're saying it's 3 months, but yet here and the other one is 8 months. And I know that 8 months refers to the whole process, but if you deal with the critical skills first, which is going to help to contribute towards the critical skills and importing the skills into the country within 3 months, that thing is not going to help you if you're going to do it in 8 months then. unless I'm misunderstanding it. Just to link that with, if I remember the 2013, the last year's report, that the target was about 20,000 skills, which was not achieved because the clinical skills list wasn't sorted out or something like that. But now that the list is there, what's the target? I haven't seen it there. I don't know if I missed it. The inspectorate, no, I'll skip that one. I think you've covered it in the presentation, the increased allocation for the inspectorate, which is, I must say, a positive step. It's something that has been needed to be addressed for a while now, so it's encouraging to see that there's additional revenue for the inspectorate division. Chair, on that issue of fraud and corruption, again on the report of last year, there were about 600 odd disciplinary matters. A large percentage of it was on fraud and corruption. I don't remember the exact figure, but there were 130 odd that were resolved, which means there were still some 400 odd there, which is still quite a high figure. And that gives me the indication that perhaps the process of trying to deal with these internal disciplinary matters is taking far too long if you want to reduce the levels of fraud and corruption in the department. So is there something you're doing to address it, or is it my understanding incorrect? The last one, Chair, is also on the issue of fraud and corruption, I could be wrong. The Internal Audit Committee has a DRAM trust or RAM class or something to that effect on the audit committee. But I see that there is also a consultant of the department or a company in that same name. It seems to just hear your thoughts on it. And is it acceptable that a consultant sitting in the internal audit team just gets also taken as a consultant in the department sitting on the internal audit? And if I'm incorrect, I'm very happy to accept the response you give me. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Minister.
Thank you very much, Chair. And I would like to thank the TG for the informative presentation. We can see that much work has been done by the department. Thank you very much. Then, Chair, I've got a few questions. My first question regarding the issue of BMA Chairperson, I would like to ask if the department will engage with non-governmental stakeholders that should be impacted by the BMA in planning stage. And also, Chair, would like to get clarity from the department on the issue of the Department of Defense. What is the role of the Department of Defense? And checking, Chair, if is there any synergy and coordination between these departments, because I'm also serving in the PC of Defense. So there is that issue of BMA, so I would like to check from the Department of Home Affairs what is their relationship, what is it that they are doing together with the defense. Chair, my other question, I just want to know how has the current year, that is annual performance plan, attempted to address the low rate of achievement of targets for the previous year. As we all know that the targets were very, very low. And what financial plans are in place to address the audit findings in relation to collaborating the Department of International Relations and Cooperation at embassies and missions abroad, because we know that that has been a thorny issue in the previous year. Then on slide 22, on the issue of the presentation of IDs, that is the first issue, issued within 54 working days. Just want to check from the department, which ones? Is the smart card or the old green barcoded ID? According to the department plan, when is the last day for issuing of the old green IDs? Then on page 40, slide 40, that is corruption. The main strategies for the department to try and combat corruption. I just want to check from the department, how many cases do they have in the department? How many that we have lost and how many that we have won? I just want to get from the department. And Chairperson, my last question is on the department 2015-16 budget. There is a significant reduction in budget allocation of the state service sub-program, which is responsible for our population register. I just want to know, Chair, if this will not impact negatively on service delivery. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Premier.
Thank you, Sir President. Thank you, Mr. Akin, for the presentation that is so clear. My question, maybe some of the questions have been asked, but my first question is, as you know that on the State of the Nation, as a president, you aside the attraction of critical skills from foreigners for a quick growing economy. Are there any challenges with regard to acquiring these critical skills? And secondly, on the same issue on the other, what do the regulations of Immigration Act assist in acquiring these critical skills? Thirdly, on page 21 also we talk about on page 30, that's what I'm thinking that there was a reference from page 8, that's why I'm concerned about this solar address. Again on page 21, also, the President did mention the issue of allowing banks to extend the current footprint of smart card application points. Now, I heard one of the other things talking about this issue, but about the Minister, but I also want to check how I'm concerned about the personal information. Mr. How, in that regard, how will personal information be secured? I think lastly, I think certain functions of a budget would be decentralized to improve access. I don't know whether what functions may be those functions that talks to the budget decentralization of the functions and the budget. What may be, is that to uncheck those functions? I think that is also a question that I would like to call me. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, DG. And also on our desk, I see this nice periodic. So I think well done to Ekai, on my face. And thank you very much, DJ, for your presentation. However, I'm asking myself that the time that you are, that is going to be employed to look at the critical skills, you say that it's going to be 3 months. Are we not going to create, 3 months I think is very short, are we not going to create a country of bogus professionals? Because we have seen, especially on the medical field, on the finance field, and that most of these people, when we go back and then check on them, they are bogus. So I think time that you have allocated is very short. On the professionalizing the department, just wanted to check the curriculum that you know to skills development, what kind of content or curriculum that is there, and certificate that you give, what level and which institution are you linked with. And on the strategic objective of ethical conduct, the vetting process is a tedious exercise. Can't you give time frame, you know, or speak to the people who are doing the vetting to speed up that, because really our country is in a serious, you know, there is a problem with security if ever we are not going to speed up this vetting process. I thank you.
Well, thank you, Chairperson. I think I've been covered with most of the questions, but the other question that I'm not covered is the cadets. I just want to find out what's the meaning of the cadets. Are they people who are employed by Home Affairs and then they go for training, or is there intent? The other question, Chair, is relying on the security of IDs and all that. We read on the paper, I think 2 weeks ago, where people try to get IDs because their IDs were stolen or there was a fraudulent event. And how do we assist those people? Because I think it's about 3 families that I've read about. The fourth one is the one who was busy with, who worked for the SACP, for the SEF, for 27 years. But his ID was earmarked with red, that is a Zimbabwean. Unfortunately, that was my brother-in-law, which is that has been sorted out today. I just received the SMS that you can go and apply for the ID. Now, who assists those people when you read from the media that there are people who can't get IDs? And those who don't have that certificate who are over 30 years old, how to assist them? Thank you, Shana.
Thank you very much. I really don't have much, DG, except just simply to emphasize the issue of inspectorate. As far as I'm concerned, it is key to the security of the country. And I would have loved us to elevate it and really seriously up and put much more effort, because the issuing and approving of documentation and application without the resultant deportation of those that have been disapproved, I think that needs to really assist us that much. And I think within our next 3 years or so, one would like to see a much more vigorous attention given to that specific issue. And whenever the response that becomes available, then it must be a competing need, seriously so. Otherwise, we would preach security when we are actually undermining it. And then also, of course, it's just also re-emphasize the question of the vetting. The vetting, that it must be really speeded up, and we must complete it quickly, so that, you know, it's the outcome of those individuals that are required to be vetted, and then there is credibility and integrity to their work, and we can rely on the outcomes of their efforts and the thing. Now, the other thing that I just wanted to check, I'm not sure whether maybe I'm confused things. Last week or a week, last week I think I was of the opinion that we were talking about 403 frontline offices. Today we are talking about 405. Is it a growth or just simply a misquotation from last week to today? Thanks. You may proceed, DG.
Thanks,
Chair.
Other questions for colleagues, I'm sure they've taken, but this I don't know if I respond on that. So let me start with the issue of the GPW. No, GPW is not there, because remember, they are funded separately. So now we only put them if there was a funding from Treasury to us to them. So now this year they didn't receive funding from Treasury, so that's why they're not there. That is the reason. And they are a government component now. So that's why now we didn't report anything about GPW. So the comment about inspectorate is really what we are saying. If we don't have that process, it does not help us. We are pushing them to the bucket with nothing at the end, bottomless pit. So we are, that's why we said it is not enough that 37 million, but we're going to start with it and go to Treasury and prove that by giving us this 37 million, this is the impact. But if you are giving us more, then we'll do something. In fact, the branch, we said to them, they must push that we appoint those people within the first quarter if we can manage to do so. So that we can go and say, we've appointed them, this is what we're gaining out of that process. And so, as Honorable Raputo raised this issue of vetting, it's really a matter for concern to us. That's why I was saying, if you take police, you take defense, they put some powers around this issue of vetting because of their status. That's why, again, I was saying, if you are leaving Home Affairs outside that status, this is what is going to happen. Because now we go and collect information, we just submit. And then maybe in the line of state security might not be at the front, but that's where it's a problem. So we do collect, submit, but it's not in our hands now to finalize that process. So it's something which is really, really a problem for us, which we want to prioritize. Then Mr. Mkiza will deal with the number of offices. I think I even asked him if there are two offices open, but he will respond on that. So let's go now to Honorable Minister and say, yes, as he said, that this issue of the attitude of staff is something which is still bothering us. That's why we said we are trying all the ways and means to go to the staff, but there's a saying that if there are no consequences, I think we are talking much about training and all that and all that. I think now we must pass that level. That's what the minister is looking at. To say, we can't always talk about training, about mentoring, about whatever. Then we must have a point where someone in the Department of Home Affairs must be fired. That's on the issue of the attitude. Once that happens, then it's going to change. We hope now that we have crossed now that line of mentoring, training. Nobody can say now, I did not know. It would be an issue. So it's something which we really want to look at, which in the process, I would say, it will also assist us if we get on that. The issue of level of responses in the people is still a matter of challenge which we are dealing with. It. Hence, we're saying, if we can start by having this contact center, because the problem with our call center, yes, they do take the calls at the call center, which is fine, but that's not what the clients want. Only that the call has been received, I've got a reference number. They want the resolution of that case. But with the system they have, it does not help them. That's why now we have, one of the things we have done at this call center was under civic services. Then we are arguing the department and say, maybe civics, you are a player in the referee, because now the queries are coming from you, you still deal with it. Then I will move it now. The contact center for civics is going now to a separate branch altogether, so that now they can then check and balance. It is just that we think it's going to assist us in a particular way. But yet the important one is when we put that. So there's something which we have talked about, but let me put to the committee, we might have a challenge on this issue because we're not in the same hymn book with the unions. This thing of the hours, we are implementing it by first, that is Monday. But because we are believing as management that if when we open that office, the manager is there. When we close that office, the manager is there. But we can't let it be that it is junior staff who is there at the time when the office is closing. But the unions are not seeing eye to eye with this matter, with us, but we are implementing it. So what I'm saying to the committee is that there might be a risk of how they can respond on the matter. But we think that if we do that, it's where we're going to service our people better. Because once we have those processes, even now when you ask a manager, why did you let people, like the complaints you get, that the queue was cut at 2 o'clock and was sent back at home and what? But then I called the manager, I said, no, but me, I had to lock off at 4 o'clock, I was not there. But if now he's there, he says, no, but how can you leave the staff member, then you go first as a manager, guard? So those are the things we think is going to assist us. Even within that process, we're also saying, on the last Wednesday of the month, just have 1 hour, where as a manager, you sit with your staff, you deal with these issues. So we think that is going to assist us to try and do so. Now practically, we can have now a way to say, but manager, you've got all the tools, why are you not using them? The issue of SVFS is something which we are managing it, but I'll let Jake to respond on it. Yes, the issue of the rollout of smart card, why we were not putting it, because the AG said your targets must be smart. The only thing which made us not to say, let's put in the resources we have, was the next question which was going to be asked and going to be difficult to answer for us was to say, how many banks we're going to have by end of the financial year? Then that was the problem. But we've got a target which says a one machine to us must produce nearly 8 cards per day. So that target is already there. But now the issue now is that how many outlets would I have? So that's the only dependence now where we said at the moment, let's not put that in our plans for 15, 16. But now in the 16-17, we've already been understanding about how we're going to roll out this. And we remember we wanted to do with the banks and as well as with the post office. But the only thing, and as we said, that minister is going to announce now, enforcement, now to say one thing now on the matter, and because of that question, is to say, still Home Affairs must provide resources to that matter. It's not going to be a bank which runs the system. So Home Affairs will still have to provide, so even that we have to take into consideration. So that is the issue which makes us. But at the moment, we are working, we want to reduce basically the 7 years. Because when we are counting the 38 million with the resources we have, it will take us 7 years to reach that target. It's going to come to the other question about when we'll be stopping the green ID book. So that's why I want to shorten it by these interventions this minister will put. So I'm sure by the time the minister gives the announcement, still I'm sure he'll be able just to say probably this is where I will pilot this, but in the 15-16 I will come that year, 16-17, the impact of that will come on what we do. Biometrics, as we said, that's what we do. Ask a critical question, would be necessary to apply in person. Remember, we always talk about this issue of the risk management. So once those things are implemented, surely, but remember, firstly, it's not all the countries where we even require visas, not all. Because you look at the security concerns of a particular country and say, no, you are visa exempt. So now that country does not come with a visa, so it does not need to go and apply anyway. I'm sure once we implement that biometrics at the port of entry, another risk assessment is still going to be done. There might might be countries where we might say, no, you can get your visa, I mean your biometric name at a port of entry. There might be countries where you still need it. Let me make why, when people don't explain this issue of applying in person. I'm sure we still remember the case of Ludwig Samuel. What happened then? She comes to the country and crosses the border with no fingerprint taken, or either at the country of origin. Then once it comes into the country, it's changing like somebody else. It says, no, I'm born here, not anywhere else. I'm born here. There's this LRP, and then it gets to the system or to fraudulent people. But if now somebody has gone and applied in person, I've got your photo, I've got your fingerprint, you can't change it anywhere. Whether you come in the country, change yourself. But as we said, that maybe once we implement that, it might reduce a lot of risk, and then we might have. So I'm saying once now we implement that, risk assessment will be done. To say, do you still need to do this? If you want to do it, in which country? So if now there are still 30 or so countries which are not visa exempt, once you implement this, would it reduce that or not? So it's something which we will look at it at that time. This is a critical question which you asked about the 3 months was also asked. Let me explain about where this, remember we are taking this from what is given to the department at the state of nation address, as you said. Then this we are saying now is what, if you look at this, is what the department has been given in the MTS. It's decided at the presidency to say this is what we want to achieve. But when they give you that target, it's over a period of 5 years. So now what they are looking at, which is, as you said, that the president wants to look at this thing to say people, when they are applying for this thing, they are taking too long. Because they're not going only in one department. That's why it talks about one stop shop somewhere. Yes. Because now the problem is that I'm looking for a business permit. I must go to Department of Environmental, I must go to that department, I must go to that. So now the president is trying to say, look, I don't care what your terms you have. Try and look at this thing and work it together so that within the 3 months I am able to get this. That's why now that as a department now we started and say, we will make sure that it is almost over 5 years. We'll say, okay, in year one, I want to first increase my level that I'm not producing only 50% within 8 months. I want to increase that now to 70% as a starting point. But after that, we need to look at it. Why does it take 8 months if I'm a critical skill? Because at the end, we want to achieve that 3 months. To say, if I'm a critical skill, I must not take so long. So that the 3 months is what we are given from the president as a whole. But now for us as a Home Affairs for year one, we are still saying it's 8 months, but on the critical part, by the time I get there, I want to reduce that thing to 3 months, even less. So that's why it can look like now it is, it's what is a target. We have to work on it for 5 years. And then for year one, this is what we're saying. But ultimately, when we come now with the strategic plan now of next year, I should be showing now that by that time, I'll be achieving that. Because if I don't, then now I'm not complying. But how are we going to do this? We need now to talk to other departments and say, Department of Labor, if there's somebody now who comes and applies, we are the first entry point on this issue. How many days you must take to conclude that? As an example, as a department, now we're talking to police. Remember, one of the requirements is the police clearance. Then we said, no, we can't conduct the police clearance where people fill a form and send this. Can't we have an interface of the system between the two? Once you do that, it comes quicker. Now we are trying to work. Now we're at the end. 3 months can be a possibility. But it's just that now we need to work on those things. That's what this thing is. And then as a target for Christian, what is the target? As you said, in the last minister's, this number was coming from the previous minister's contract with the president.
And then now after that, now that number is no longer the captain to respond on that. And this thing of corruption, as you said, a disciplinary process is still not short, is not. It's still a problem. That it takes too long because of the long processes which government we have, which is fair for people, but it does take too long. Because I must just write you a letter where you have done this, what is your response, Mark? And then after that, you appeal, you go. It's a long process. I don't know, DPSA was looking at certain processes on this matter, even to say, can't we have cases where DPSA is going to have a central presiding officers, which is going to be at DPSA. So that means the department, I just get a case, I charge the person, and then it moves the Navy, it will move quicker. But DPSA is looking at this matter, but it is taking too long. It's causing this problem that it takes so too long. I think now on the issue of the consultant has been explained that you have to also, an internal audit member is not a full-time employee, so you have to recognize as a consultant. So all the audit committee members are just listed as consultants, but not that they've got a job within the department. So that's what you have done in the strat plan. Then I go now to Honorable Mr. Say, BMA. Yes, as we remember, BMA at the end, once it comes to Parliament, is a public process at the end. So we will consult with everyone, even at our level, so that when that bill now comes to Parliament, there are going to be public hearings. There must be no stakeholder who said, I was never consulted by Home Affairs. So we will be doing that, to go to anyone who is part of this, we consult with them, so that by the time that bill comes to Parliament for public hearings, they've already given us the input, so there will be no too much changes once the process is in Parliament. So we will do that at the planning stage. The role of defense, you remember we said the cabinet has approved the vision of the BMA. The vision of the BMA is saying it will be responsible for ports of entry and the borderline. But how are we going to be sharing the responsibility between defense and home affairs? Defense currently, they go into a borderline, they look at the goods which are crossing the borderline, they're looking at the people where there is no borderline, they say, that is not our work. We are not at that level. The defense is for the safeguarding of the country, in the threat to the territorial integrity of the country. So what we mean is that the BMA will be dealing with that thing of making sure there is a fence, but if defense there is a threat, which now might be coming from a country, then they will come in at a particular. So there will be that shared responsibility. But where it is really clearly is with the in the maritime. They said in the maritime there is a 12 nautical miles. What it means now, from the land up to about 12 nautical miles within the sea, that will be the responsibility of BMA, but beyond that, then defense will take over. So that's how now that is going to be differentiated between the two. But in the legislative process which you are engaging in, that will be covered in the law to say how this thing is going to be done. So our target is to come up with this bill according to the processes that it must come to Parliament, I think it's on the second quarter of this financial year. The bill to come to Parliament. Then now, the law, yes, we did look at that. That's why you can see that now there are targets which we have looked at it to say, no, let's reduce this one, let's make sure, but we are not reducing it in the manner that there must be soft targets. It must be based. That's what I'm saying. One of those we have looked at is a permanent residence, how do we do it, and the other one is that 54, I think there was a passport which also this was 95 before, but now is 90. So we've looked at them and say it must be something which we can achieve, and we must not put things which we are not going to be able to achieve. We want to achieve 100%, and next day we've looked at that. Cooperation with DECO is what I've explained, to say DECO now they will be taking up the payment of the allowances and all that, and the revenue is the one which is sitting with the accountant general. Once that has been done, then that issue now of DECO will be closed. Then the 54 days with the smart card were not yet put again, because of this learning which we experienced. The 54 days is only for the old process. With the smart card, we have not yet put the target in terms of time taken to produce a card. The only target we have is the number of types of cards which we have. Why we are not, we're still sitting with that? We needed to calculate it clearly to say a card, if it is captured from the front office, how many days does it take to get a GP to get printed, and how many days it must go to a courier to be sent back. And so we're still doing that, because the product, we're still adjusting the system now here and there. One of the things which we are doing now currently, when you go to our office at booth, only takes a photo now. But now we're looking at taking the fingerprint, because we found out that a booth takes 3 minutes. But a counter, when you take that form, you take a fingerprint, you take a form, it takes 10 minutes. So it means that it's doing a conversion. Now we've moved the taking of the fingerprint from the counter to the booth. So now we still want to calculate those times. Once now we are ready with that, then we'll come back with the time taken for the smart card. As we said now, that no, this is not that it is a reduction of budget, as I've said. It's just that the 600, as I said, now that the money for self-financing, will receive it during the adjustment estimate. So it's not that it is. If you look at civics, administration got 141, and then civics got 458 million. So now it is still not there now in the, if you compare 4484 plus 4121, like it is now reduced. But if now you take into account that 452 will receive it again, then it's not going to be a reduction. That's what I was explaining. 2 months is not a risk. Yes, as I said, that it looks like it is a risk if now we just do it now. But if we put all those systems, as I've said, in place, and make sure that all the checks and balances are put. But the issue here is to say, if we are saying critical skills are needed for us to grow our economy, we can't now on the other side go at a slow pace. We need to match that. But as I'm saying that, for now, we have to build all that. If the system is not giving us that, then we'll say, what must we do? But the instruction is to say, the critical skills must be 3 months within these 5 years. They don't want beyond what we're talking of 8 months. Curriculum, DG Learning Academy will deal with that. Ethical conduct, as I've already responded and said, this issue of vetting is a major issue for us. Then honorable Kenya, attraction of critical skills, what are the challenges? Well, as we say, you asked another question, are these regulations assist us in doing this? We think they do, but there's still a lot of awareness which we must deal with the companies. I went to a meeting with Eskom complaining that they don't get critical skills people for Medupi. That is not possible. When we sat with them, the first thing people they do, there's a visa, visitor's visa, which you can get it through Section 11 to B, which allows you to work that way. Like if now we are a film maker, you are just coming here for a short time, then you can work, but you must go back when that thing comes to an end. But what is the difference? If I'm applying now for a work visa, if I'm applying for that, there's nothing we check, police or whatever, because it's a short thing. You just come quickly and short by its nature. But now when you apply now for a critical skills, if we need to still look at it, is this qualification you still have, is it correct? Is don't have the police issues. It doesn't mean when you are a critical skills, you are not subjected to that. Now people, they take a shortcut and say, no, come with a visitor's visa, you come and work at Mututi. When now that thing comes to an end, it says, no, you have to go back to your country because you can't change your status within the country. They say, no, but this person is a critical skills, but he came with the wrong permit in the first instance. So that's where now it gives us those issues. But the regulation that they stand even said, if I'm a critical skills person, I'm in the list, I don't even need to have a job. As long as my qualifications are proven but at the critical, I don't have any criminal record, we give you a permit for a year. So why do you come on a visitor's visa first? And then that's what people are doing. So it gives them that kind of a challenge. Then what we're also saying as Home Affairs is that we really need to have a process now which we still look at. That's why Minister was on this. And remember, I talk about the restructuring, which we still deal with it in the department, where the Home Affairs does not need a unit which is about international relations, whereby now we can go and say in the regions of the world, these are the skills which we need. We need to post someone in Asia, so to speak, who must go then recruit these skills for us. And when they do that, regulations are already allowing that. When we look at your application now as a critical skills person, we don't look at you as an individual. If you've got a spouse, you've got kids, that must be approved at once. Because it makes things now easy. Because before, we were looking at you, give you a permit, the next thing now, the spouse must come apply and all that. But now you must be looked as a one. If you're a critical skill, I don't need you to have a job. As long as you've got, so there are processes which are already easing that process, which you need to do that. Then this issue of the benefits, we said that is something which we will come with it and say, but we're still, as we said in the last meeting, rest assured that the issues of security, we've looked at it, we'll make sure that nobody touches our system as it's supposed to be. But we will come with that in detail. I think PPG will deal with the cadets. What is the meaning of that? This thing of the fraudulence, you remember what an effort, we still, we communicate, but our people, they still don't get this information either. We just said we don't know what we must do, but we tried. You remember last year, we issued, there were about 29,000. There were 29,000 duplicate IDs which we had. We printed it on paper. We tried to even split and say in the Eastern Cape you must use this paper, in the Western Cape use this paper. We're on radios and says come forward, there's even a number. It's not 32551. Yes. So there's even a number where we say if now you want to check your status, go to a cell phone, put 32551, put your ID number and send. That thing comes back in a minute and say you are married or else you are not. You are a duplicate ID and all those things are there, but still people, they do not know. And in that we've got units which now if a person has reported, it's very unfair. That's what was said. It can be that because a person now knows the honorable member, his case must be sorted out within 5 days. But because me, I don't know anybody, it must take 6 years. But it's just because people, they do not know, despite what we are saying. Maybe we need to do this system, because maybe we'll again run another advert without getting into the list, because it's too expensive, to still say, if you have a duplicate ID, dial 32551, and you put your ID number, and it checks your status. Even the people still comes to us and say, I mean, at the 11th hour before they get married because of the tax systems now, and say, I went there, I found myself, I'm married to so-and-so. And say, but why you were keeping this system? Because according to the system, you were married in 2008. So people, they don't check their status on the system. But we need to re-communicate this issue of the duplicate IDs, recognize IDs, and the big one now, which is still surprising, but is still there in numbers. That in South Africa, there are still people, as a lot of people said, I was on the radio SAFM. Somebody said, I'm 52 years, but I don't have an ID document. I said, how is it possible? Without voting, but I said, but you are a citizen, you vote 1994, without saying which party. 1994, 1999, how is it possible that you are 52 but don't have an ID, but people are still do not have those documents? And then ID and SOS is free. It doesn't say now I don't have money to come and apply for it. But yeah, we want members to assist us on this communication as well of the LRD. People don't have documents. This number of, you can check yourself in Home Affairs website, 32551, and then can get us. Mr. M. Key, let me go to them. So you answer, you know, Mr. M. Key, JK, and KT. Yeah.
Can I just check one thing? Honorable
Ned,
did I surprise you? Okay.
No,
when I was giving the honorable members an opportunity, you know, it's hard.
I only
realize now that I can see that you are there at the back, and I've never given you an opportunity.
The reason why I was quiet is because this guy was not here next to me now. I thought how I was going to press him. But in fact, mine is.
Yeah, just wait, John.
I must be honest, I might have been sleeping a little bit in talk, but I don't know. Maybe swear. Mine is too small, generally. It's around this issue of these people inside the country, like the waiting list that are being verified. No, those who applied, and now they are on the waiting list because of verification of the allegations of being here, the Zimbabweans in particular. And two, the issue that we are raising, that others that came in a wrong way, now inside they are saying other things, but they are still here inside because they are being verified because they applied. Now this question I'm raising is, in fact, what I want to ask is very simple. Is it impossible for this government to take all these people to the borders? All of them, those who are on the waiting list to wait there. While we are verifying, I know it might happen. Is it impossible? That is why I'm asking this. If you see also these SAPC people, those who are alleged were attacking them. Two are alleged to be Zimbabweans. Two who bought those cars are Bangladesh. So it's foreigners. Now, the fact that we've been saying other cases that we will never be able to solve here is because most of the time it's these foreign nationals. While South Africans are involved, we can't say they're not involved, they're involved. But because of this reason, and there's something here in front of us here, what happened, is it impossible for South African government, once it's processing this thing, to take them with trucks and put them there in the meantime, those who are not supposed to be here, even those who are on the waiting list because of the applications that are being processed. Just that's what I wanted to ask. Otherwise, other things I've heard, I understand, but this one, because my main worry is that if now those be arrested and found having done that, those who are asking ourselves, how can the South Africans do that to the SAPC people? Because they know that. What will happen to you one day? These people will do the same thing, or they don't even know it. They don't watch this channel 404 of the GT, and everybody is obsessed about watching it. They don't do that. They will not even at times. I doubt if they know the ministers of this country. So it's too dangerous the way I'm looking at it, because we're analyzing it. And we're saying this thing is too dangerous. And if there's no way that the South African government can deal with it, we're going to find ourselves with the problem. Look now what happened to this one. That's my only question. I don't know if it's possible. It's too complicated. But is it impossible for the department to find the results. We know they must be taken and repaired to the borders whilst we are processing. It might be damn expensive. We might not be able to do it. I don't know. Thank you, sir. That's what I wanted to know.
Thank you very much. I'm sure the latest information we can give us in this. Is it Minister Hanako, whom they tried to hijack at the entrance of his house?
Yes.
Just about 2 weeks, 2 3 weeks back. Yes. And then, of course, is that we can talk about who chairperson, which is the same, what happened in England last year. You all know. And then, of course, is that you can respond. Is it possible to move everybody that's not supposed or who has got no approval to be here to the border and must wait there?
No, sir. I think, sir, that the response is the one to say, firstly, as a government, we understand that there is a matter which we need to deal with. It's not a matter which is under the carpet. It's on the top of the table. Hence, now we are saying we need to look firstly at the issue why there was a decision to establish a border management agency just as a first step. It says it does not help you to have the ports of entry as a gate, which is tight, it's got cameras, it's got this fingerprints we're talking about. It's not going to help you. But if your border line is porous, then there's nothing you are doing. Hence now the decision is to say bring this BMA to deal even with the border line. So that now we are saying the tap, I must first close the tap, because still we can do that. But if now tomorrow is what we're doing, in fact, in the past, we'll deport, we'll remember the department took a decision and said between 10th of December and 10th of January, we're not deporting anyone, because people were coming literally on the 10th of December, go to Libela, then we have to take them with an expensive, cross the country, 10th of January, they're back. Then they said the decision, no, we're not. So that is closed there. So that's the first step. The second one is the one it says now, look at the policy which you're going to bring to Parliament. Currently, our law says I need only critical skills, that's what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. But those people are not coming to our country illegally because they can apply. But we're saying our asylum seeker process is being abused because I come as an economic migrant, but I said I'm an asylum seeker. So let's come with the legislation which will say, how do you deal with the people with the most skills from the neighboring countries? That's what we to bring over the minister and the policy we are dealing with. Once we close that gap now as a number two, that is what the chair was talking about. What is the point? If you now you follow all that process, and you say to me, I decline your permit, then the next thing, I'm staying here, because you can't deport me. That's why again I was saying, if now the inspectorate function is not resourced properly, that process is end up useless. It does not benefit us on anything. So it's something now we should look at it. So that now when we do all those things, we are saying, everyone who has come to country legally is welcomed. Whether you are an asylum seeker, you are persecuted in your country, we will welcome you. But what we do not want is the illegal people are talking about. And that's why now there is not a clash of ideas, I think maybe a clash of understanding. When we talk about this issue of saying Home Affairs, your regulations are frustrating tourism, that is in the public space. And he says, no, these things must be balanced. A tourist will come to our country, he will end up in the sea, in the Table Mountain. But those who are not tourists, they are legal. They will end up taking TVs for people, killing someone in the country, and all those things are in record. That's what we are saying, Minister is on record to say, there's nothing wrong with these regulations. Because if now, that's why he asks a question to the nation and say, what if one day, in fact he says, there's somebody who came from their countries, killed some boat, we have sent him, but it was not a South African. He was a man, that's why it was not an issue. He asked a question. If now somebody can come, bomb someone here, what people will say? I won't say now Home Affairs, your regulations are frustrating the economy and all that. So that's what then I was saying. We need now to make our people to understand that we are a welcoming country, but let's not allow what happened. I mean, in Soweto, as Home Affairs, we were worried to say, if that person who shot that boy was 14 years, is found out, already was found out that he's got an illegal firearm, fine. But what if he's found that it's illegal in the country? People are going to come and ask us, how did we let those people to be in the country? That's why I was saying, go and apply in person in your country for origin before you come here. That's why I was saying, I want your fingerprint as you cross the border. That's why I'm saying I must put a proper process in the border line. Thereafter, we will deal with the people who are already in the country in a human manner and all what they deserve. So that's why as Home Affairs, we always differentiate between people in our country legally, so which we welcome them, and the people in our country illegally, which we do not welcome them. That's what I'm saying.
Okay, thanks for
listening. Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, good morning, good day. The question, the first one I need to respond to is the number of officers. And I think we will just connect to this, and it was an error. And the offices are in fact 407, because there were additional offices in Western Cape that were opened, like in what is this place? So we will just give you the updated list, Honorable Chair, because it's got a breakdown per province, so that you can have a list of, and the numbers will not be changing. It was just in time. We also need to update this in line with the new offices that were added. And then on the issue of the 54 days, and I think the DG had answered. But here it's only referring to the Green ID book, and not the Smart ID card. Smart ID card is quite quick. The only thing that we still struggle with is that there are still young people who apply, and they are not within the radius of getting the Smart ID card. So those ones, we still have to give them these cards in time, and that's why it still remains as a target. And then, of course, the issue of the banks, how will it, there's no information. It will be secured, as we did explain to the honorable members in the last sitting, that there is a clear process of securing our transmission of data, and the DG has indicated that it will be our official. We are just renting a space there, but the details will be provided at the unveiling of this project by our minister. But we just want to allay fears, because if there is confusion even out there about how will this partnership work, we would like just to emphasize that personal information and data will remain secure as in our offices as we work currently, because all security measures would be in place in while we have a small office in the bank. Now on the issue of the how do we assist those who have their IDs stolen? Did you answer that? But on the one of the dead year or without the certificate, I think here the answer still lies on the responsibility of citizens to register birth. And the government have gone out of its way. Since 2009-10, President personally launching the birth registration and to eradicate the LRP. That they must present themselves to us. We've got the screening committees in offices. They should be able to go there, where the screening committee will then take the application. They will then interview those who claim that they know you, and based on that, they submit an application to head office. We'll then do fingerprint verification to determine whether you are telling the truth, that you were never registered. Secondly, that you were never in the country, either through DEPA, because most who have the problem of this. They claim they are not having the ID. They claim that everybody is dead. They are the only ones living in the country. And we have to then establish their identities. And through the LRP, then we do this screening and this exercise of searching on our hands, because most of them, we have found them to be on the system, but they came from Lesotho for the mining purposes. They came from Mozambique, but they now say, yeah, I've stayed in the country for a long period, and they take the shortcuts. Forgetting that honorable members will remember that during the time of President Mandela, there was a waiver for SADC in particular, for people to acquire citizenship correctly in the country. And these people did not, on two occasions, follow on those waivers that were given. Now we have that problem of this, the DAOs, who then claim, most of them, that they were born, but they don't know their mother. The mother died, the father died. The whole, everybody in the sight of the both parents are deceased. And we then struggle to say, who then are you for us to determine that you can have a birth certificate or not? So we are moving towards the eradication of that by December, that we just make sure that birth must be registered within 30 days. That is a clear message that we're sending to citizens. And we can proudly say that if you look at 1992, we were registering about 54% of birth outside of 30 days as late registration of birth. And since the dawn of democracy and the restoration of dignity of people, we are now at about only, by 2012, we're only having about 20% of people who are registering birth outside of 30 days, which is a reduction of more than 33% in a drive to make sure that all citizens are documented. So I think in that effort, we then have the mobile units to make people have access to the birth registration. We have expanded hospitals to 389 to make sure there is accessibility. And we continue to have what we call high impact campaigns in the identified areas to make sure that there is resistance. Thank you very much.
Now, just before you get off, there's one thing that we just need to correct. With the initiative of the banks, there is no confusion. Don't say that there is any confusion. There's no confusion. There is uncertainty and there is a worry. And the quicker the department and the minister makes things clear on the strategy, the better. That's the situation we are in. And then the second one is, I think the Honorable Minister has asked the question, when are you going to print the last green barcoded book? And that question has not been attempted. If ever there is an answer to it.
I think what is the response on the, let's explain based on explaining the scenario. What we are saying is that it would be impossible for the department to say, I stopped the green ID book today. Whereas the offices, whatever current offices we have, are 403 spread out throughout the country. As the chair raised with us in the last meeting, if now we've got only 140 offices, and you say now to those kids, no, you won't apply for a green ID book. You must go to an office with a smart card. What you mean is to say now, those kids must travel, as the chair was indicating last week. They must travel now 100 kilometers to get into that office. That's why now we cannot. But they have to write a matric. For you to write a matric in December, November now, we must have a green ID book. As you know, we are saying, at the moment, we don't have a choice to let those kids not to get a green ID book until the roll out of the offices are getting into that level. That's why there is this strategy now to say, if we can get an agreement as we are doing it now with the banks and with the post office, so that when we are in 140 offices with Home Affairs, but now with the other offices
questions I'm getting now, I look at the region and say, in the in Northern Cape, I'm currently having 12 offices, but currently I've got 25 offices of Home Affairs. Then with the banks, I must look now in those areas where I don't have a Home Affairs and with the post office. Then at that stage, it's then that we can be able to say the last green ID book will be stopped. So that is the problem which makes us at the moment not able to say, because we can say that, but it's going to bring a more hardship to the people than now. So that was the consideration which we had.
Good afternoon, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members. I'm responding to the question by Honorable Wilson on the issue of VFS and the non-responsiveness to queries and people not being able to get appointments. Chairperson, we started working with VFS around June. In around September, we started noticing that there was a high number of applications being made online, as well as a high number of appointments made as well with every application. But we found that there was also an inordinate amount of no-shows, people that are not coming in for their appointments. And we started worrying, why do we find that if we now have an efficient process and people are not turning up for their appointments? We then started looking into the matter because we thought that it's not supposed to happen. We then started investigating the matter, and we started also getting calls and emails from immigration companies saying that, look, there's just no way that we can get appointments. What is it? And we started looking into the matter, and what they shared with us actually just confirmed our suspicions around the matter. And Jefferson, through you, if I may, I'll just read a short excerpt from an email that we received from an immigration company that does this. He says, Dear Minister DG and DHA officials, it has become increasingly difficult and now impossible to book appointments at VFS Rivonia. Through our own endeavors, we have uncovered the reason. Unscrupulous businesses and agents are loading fictitious applications and booking interview slots. These pre-booked interview slots are then being sold to members of the public starting from 500 rand. We have been offered interview slots, time slots from Jetline shop near the Rivonia VFS office, an immigration agency in the same building of the Rivonia VFS office, and an immigration agency situated on Rivonia Road near the VFS office. So this confirmed our investigations that we were doing, that we are having a similar issue that we have in the licensing department, where people pre-book these and then sell off this. So we are now in the process of working with VFS on a solution for this, a technical one, to see that it's impossible for you to make multiple bookings from a single email address and see if we can do that. Secondly, we are looking at that if you make an online application and book an appointment, that you pay for that appointment, because then you would not make hundreds of appointments on the system. So we are looking at how we can deal with that, Chairperson. But indeed, it is these very unscrupulous immigration agents that we had complained before, if the committee would recall, about how they were abusing the system during the time of the old law and the old regulation, that we are seeing doing this now. But we do have a solution, a Chairperson, and we believe that we would be able to deal with this matter very soon. Chairperson, I just wanted...
Should you not explain a little bit more? One thought that the appointment is the next step after you have lodged an application online. You lodge the application online, it's the end that now you get
his appointment. Then if a person now has not lost the application, and then somebody is capable of organizing an appointment, how does that happen? How does that happen?
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, what would happen is you apply online, and at the end of your online application, it says to you, now you can book an appointment to come and give your fingerprints and your documentation, and come in for your interview at the office, or appear in person. So there's an application that is made online. The online, remember, I don't need to give any supporting documents yet. I'm only giving it when I come into the office. So I can then create hundreds of people, say, doing online applications. And then I will only know when they come into the office whether these people are indeed the people that applied online, because there will now be a verification between the application as well as the physical person that is there. Now, also what we had a lack of on our side of foresight on this matter was we had allowed walk-ins as well. So people would come into the office and say, listen, I am here, I would like to apply. And I don't know how to utilize your system, I can't apply online. So what would then happen is we would find them, these agents coming in with walk-ins, saying that, listen, anyway, I had a booking for Mr. X and Mr. Y, but Mr. X and Y are not here now. But I've got my other client here that would want, and we are taking that slot now. And that is how we pick this up. So what we are looking at now as well is that we are looking at minimizing that, which you wouldn't be able to do a walk-in. That if you do come in, you need to visit. We don't know, we will come with, we are working on a solution, I might say, Chairperson, in terms of how to deal with that matter, this matter. We are already at an advanced stage, and we believe that we will crack it very soon. We will be able to present to our Director General a solution to deal with this particular problem. Chairperson, the other one that I wanted to deal with, issue that I wanted to deal with was the 3 months. Please, the 3 months in the minister's performance agreement relates to temporary residence visa, and the 8 months that we have there relates to permanent residence visa. So it is the permanent residence visa that takes up longer, 8 months. But for a critical skills permit, we do that within 8 weeks. We are able to do that. And because it is one of our low-risk visas, and because we now do it in conjunction with DTI, with the Department of Labor, and with the professional bodies, we are now able to do it within that particular period of time. What happened in the past, and the import of bogus people with critical skills, was that in the old law it was left up to the Home Affairs official to check the credentials of an engineer. There was no way they could do that, to check the credentials of a doctor. So, and also even to check the veracity of professional bodies' documents that are given to Home Affairs. We didn't have access to databases and we're not able to do that. But currently now what you need is, if you apply for it, you need to apply through the South African professional body. The professional body would send the outcome to us and confirm that it is their outcome and indeed this person is a professional person registered with their body. A DDI would also give their input to us, and we are better now able to manage bogus applicants in this particular area. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you. Is there any other one?
Good day, Chairperson, and good day, honorable members. There were about 3 questions that I have to respond to. One is on the Mabini were there, I think it came from Honorable Nisi. For the year 2014-15, that is to date, we had 46 cases reported. Out of the 46, 18 of them have been settled in this following manner. 18 dismissed, 8 suspended, suspensions without pay, and 3 final warnings. But the other 17 were found not guilty on the basis of not enough evidence. That is just a snap picture of this year. But if we were to talk from 2010 to 2015, the figures are way higher. 456 cases were reported between 2010 and 2015. And out of the 456, 304 of them were found guilty, 61 not guilty, and 91 there was not sufficient evidence. And of those 304 that were found guilty, 219 of them were dismissed, 39 suspended without pay, and the 46 received lesser sanctions. So they were not necessarily suspended or dismissed, but they were dealt with differently. That is as far as the statistics are concerned. The next question I want to deal with, Chairperson, is the one of the cadets. To say what exactly are the cadets. I must say that this program of the cadets actually addresses the issues of youth development as legislated in the or as stipulated in the NDP. It is a program that covers graduates that are not employed, that come from disadvantaged communities, that are sourced throughout the various provinces. And their age group is between 18 and 35. But it looks like the older they become, they don't want to learn anymore, because for now, the intake that we have is from between 18 and 27. So we don't have the elders in this group. What we do with them then, as mentioned before, let me just say it for emphasis, is that we give them theoretical training on what Home Affairs is all about. We are sculpting a well-rounded cadre of the DHA who would be able to work in any environment, be it in civics or in immigration. So after they've received the theoretical training, then we also expose them to experiential learning. So they actually get to go to the office and practice what they learned, and they get assessed on that. And it is on the basis of their assessment that they either qualify or don't qualify or get certificate. So the program that we are currently having, we are hoping that by the end of August, they would have finished the program, and they would have finalized all their portfolios of evidence so as to be assessed. And then it will also kickstart the next intake. All right, let me finish with that one. The next question that I also want to address is the one that was asked by Honorable Raputi on the issue of what is the content of this qualification. This is actually a flagship of the department in that it's not very many departments that have a national qualification recognized and that is registered for their particular department. It is an N2F5 registered with PCTA because it is a conglomeration of various skills programs. And this program as well is intended to form a well-rounded cadre of the DHA in that it focuses on three main elements. It has the electives, it has the compulsory courses, and it has the soft skills elements to it. So it kind of builds around the picture. In terms of content, the list is quite extensive, but I'll try to go through it quickly just to give you an indication of what you'd find in the fundamentals and what you'd find in the electives. For instance, in the fundamentals, you have shorter programs, skills programs that cover the following: analysis and research, communication skills, multiple intelligence, and that in itself is combined because it has emotional intelligence, social and cultural intelligence. It also gives them study skills because to others, I must say fundamentals that everybody that goes through the program must do. And then we have another section within that that is called the core. And under the core, it has current affairs. It teaches people on diversity management, ethical principles. So we cover extensively the whole issues of ethics and integrity, the issues of fraud and corruption, human rights and democracy, client relations, internal and external client relations. We further on deal with risk management, safekeeping and handling of face value documents and stamps. So we do actually train people on this, as well as on stress management. And then the third leg of this program, which covers now the elective, has two sub-legs, because it's a level on its own. It has electives for immigration and electives for civic services. Under immigration, for instance, we give them skills around analyzing the dynamics of different interactive styles in client relationships, conducting a lawful arrest, search and seizure, control, aiding and abetting activities, explaining the administration of a port control office, interpretation of current legislation, and many others, including counter xenophobia and all others. So we give them those kind of skills programs. And then under the electives for civic services also, they are taught on the issues of client relations, because they are the people now that will be dealing with the cold face and dealing with clients. Demonstrating the understanding of fingerprinting, screening applicants to establish and ascertain identity where these people actually are from, identifying and interpreting legislation in the context of civic services, receiving and attending to complaints, demonstrating a full knowledge of civic services end to end. That covers from birth, death, marriage, and all of those aspects. So it is quite an intensive program. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I think we don't have any more time now to do any other thing other than just round you up. The work that you have done, it looks like it's going to be very difficult to go to those issues that relate to the audit action plan. But I really take honorable members that the DG really explained all of them. We did understand, and I think we should be able to move forward and make follow-ups on those issues when we hear specific reports from the department. We should be able to ask pertinent questions to see whether there is any progress that is being made on that. And I think I just need to thank the, or just before I thank the department, maybe just ask the event. Yeah, just to contact the officials of the department and just get more information about the 32551 and what is there that needs to be sorted out so that we can assist in communications and communicating the thing. And make sure that certain things are sorted out there. And yeah, on that basis, I think we. I am sorry, DG, that unfortunately, of course, that we were to deal with the strategic plan and the APP. But for some reason, we have crisscrossed into annual performance, whatever, and then left and right, and you know, it's but. At least is that the honorable members had an opportunity to do so, and it will probably become a little bit focused as we move forward. We still have about 4 years here, and then it will assist us as well to really locate the windows. When we deal with the strategy, we deal with annual performance report, and then we do that, and the quarterly report, we do that. We will eventually see these windows and then talk to them correctly so that we don't frustrate you, you know, to look for answers that you are not prepared to give. And then and as we move forward. And but thank you in any way. You have provided answers to questions that have been raised, and really need to deal with. And we still want to emphasize, the sooner we get some clarity on the issue relating to banks on smart ID, the quicker the uncertainty will disappear and the worry also will disappear. And also, of course, is that, as I've indicated before, the vigor and the drive to really attain the requisite number of inspectors that will improve the security of this country. And we must, all of us must put hands and make sure that will happen. And I think the rest will just see as we move forward. And we hope that you will also increase your interaction with the Auditor General, make sure that you get your things right, and then the quicker we see an improved audit opinion, all of us will celebrate. And on that score, thank you very much, and we hope that we'll meet again. And we are from now, I think, moving forward, we'll try always to invite a treasury official. Every time we engage a department, we're going to try and invite a treasury official who deals with your finance. Yes, we're going to do that. So that we get certain things that that can be dealt with immediately. Then you interact during this meeting or a break here and deal with it. Now, it's all that for. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And the meeting is adjourned.
Thank you.